Hey friends, Lee Brown here. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And today I'm kind of wishing the police had been called because I have questions, and maybe it's because I watch too much CSI. But when you have a property manager slash investor slash pilot like Steve Rosenberg, you never know where the conversation is going to go. So enjoy it. And I'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Tell us where you're located besides Hawaii today. So what do you do in and around real estate, and how did you land there, and who is Steve Rosenberg?
Yeah, so I first got into real estate when I was given a furlough notice as an airline pilot that I realized after 9/11, my safe, secure job was not safe and it was not secure. And it made me realize I needed to do something else. And so I started learning about real estate. Originally, I knew nothing about it because I was just an airline pilot. And what I ended up doing was I read a book a week on real estate, and I learned everything I could about flipping, wholesaling. And this is back in 2001. So a lot of these new terms didn't exist.
Sure.
And I was living in Houston, Texas, and I did very well at doing this in real estate. I bought my first apartment complex, and we ended up selling that complex. I started buying some single family houses, and I did the mistake that everybody does, that where you think you're so smart in real estate that it has a way of coming back as a wrecking ball and clearing your financial clock, we'll say. I had about 40 properties, was trying to self-manage, self-lease, self-everything, which meant I did none of them even remotely good, and realized that my business partner and I were the problem in the equation. So we actually hired a business coach, and we started at that moment a property management company for self-preservation. After that, we ended up taking this property management company and turned it into the fastest growing company in the state of Texas. We had a realty brokerage firm with us. We were in three cities. We had over 1,000 properties in 7 years. And then I ended up exiting and selling the business to a venture capital backed company where I became a VP. They had 10,000 properties, a lot of venture capital money. And so I've learned to take from nothing, from owning one rental, two rentals, self-leasing, self-everything badly, to learning how to run a business. We were the most referred property management company in Houston, Texas at the time, because we were very, very good at being partners with agents. And I was CE certified. I taught CE classes all over the state of Texas, really understood what challenges real estate agents had and how to align with them and how to really grow partnership with them. And we did a very successful job. And it was our number one inbound lead source for our company with new leads because of the inroads and relationships that I made.
All right, so let's back the truck up a little bit, because a lot of my audience is consumers, and so they're kind of interested in the nuts and bolts, but they're more interested in the realities. And so when you were getting into investing, what were the kind of books you were reading? I mean, obviously, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right? Robert Kiyosaki's very famous book.
Yeah, I learned Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I read The E-Myth. I read, at the time, a lot of Tony Robbins, because I realized that the biggest challenge in any business is you. It's your mental state and how you think and the junk that we all say in our heads. And I really realized that the fears that I had were I made them up. And, you know, the worst thing you could do is tell your friends what you're doing, because everyone will give you the advice of what you should not do. And, you ask 10 people, 9 of them will tell you, oh, that's bad. You don't want to do that. And then I started asking them, well, how many properties do you actually own? Oh, none. I'm like, so you're giving me advice and I'm taking the advice from somebody who doesn't even know what they're doing. And I'm like, that's stupid. Like I was just an airline pilot, so I didn't know these things. I was like, okay, they must know what they're doing. And what I learned was a lot of people do it for their own benefit of making themselves feel better watching you fail or quit. And it's sad, but it's true. That's the reality of life. And so I learned to disassociate myself from a lot of these people. And I started hanging around people that did real estate, that I'm like, okay, here's this crowd who's never done it. And here's this crowd who's done it and doing it. I think I'm going to go to this crowd and I'm going to talk to them and I'm going to hang out with them. So
who was that crowd and how'd you find them? Was it like a meetup? Was it a Facebook group or a real estate investor association?
Not to date myself, but Facebook didn't exist. YouTube didn't exist.
You were on MySpace?
I didn't think that existed. There was a local real estate investor groups in Houston, and I just joined them. And I would just sit there and I would watch. I learned about lease options. I learned about land trust. I learned about flipping. They had their own books. I bought their books. They had courses. I learned how to short sale. I mean, I didn't know any of these things. And I thought, wow, like I need to figure this out, because if there's another catastrophe in the, you know, a horrific attack on America, I will be out of a job. And the sad thing about this, I realized, was it was really, I don't want to say it was my fault. Obviously, 9/11 was not my fault, but it was my fault that I got lazy. And I assumed that just because I got a job, that I was done and I was safe. And that is the biggest illusion that I realized. But I'm not, you know, anyone else can think what they want. But when all of a sudden 9/11 hit and 2 days later, I got a furlough notice, I realized, okay, this safe, secure job is not safe. It's not secure. And I am very expendable. And I remember thinking to myself, I will never allow someone to dictate my future again. I will dictate my future based on what I do as an entrepreneur. Now, I still am an airline pilot. As you know, I'm in Honolulu, Hawaii right now. I fly a Boeing 777 for United Airlines. I love what I do, but I also know it's a job. And I know I can be swiped away. I can be downsized. It can be taken away at any moment. Yeah. The business and the knowledge and the systems that I have of being able to work with people, coach people, all the stuff that I do, that no one can take away, because I've invested the time in myself to do it. And I'm a big believer in self-development, getting better, always going to the next level.
All right. So you read some books and you made some investor connections. How in the world was your first investment in apartment building? Because that's so different than where most people start. They want to start small. Obviously, apartment buildings, a lot more doors, and that's a whole different space. How did you land on it? Was it a hot deal somebody told you about, or are you just feeling your oats and said, I got this?
Well, what happened was, is for the first couple of years, I had that Chicken Little inside of me that I was afraid to actually buy a rental property, if I'm being honest, because I was like, God, I don't want to put this money down. So I learned how to wholesale and how to use option contracts with properties. And I got very good at negotiating. And I realized that the most wealthiest people on the planet are communicators. So I learned a lot about negotiations. I learned a lot about communication, and I just kept refining that skill. So I was negotiating a lot of contracts, a lot of properties. I made enough money over the next 2 years that I was sitting on this pile of cash, basically going, okay, do I buy a house? Do I buy an apartment? So I went to another local real estate investing group, which happened to be an apartment group. And I'm sitting there listening and I'm looking at the numbers that they're talking about with the cap rates and NOIs of these apartment complexes. And I'm thinking, okay, I think apartments are where I want to go, because it's just, you know, on the surface, right? There's always a dark side to every investment. But anyone who thinks there isn't is wrong, but there is. And so what happened was, is I was looking to buy a 16 unit in a, we'll say, not so very good area of Houston, Texas. And this group had other fellow investors in other areas. So one guy happened to own a 52 unit right down the street. So I called the guy up and I said, hey, can I come down and pick your brain a little bit? So I go down there and this guy looks like he just came out of a war zone. I mean, he's sweating. He's dirty. He's like, you do not want to buy that 16 unit. He's like, that will be the worst mistake you ever made. He's like, I have 52 units and I can't even control it. It was a bad area. Like Drugs Inc. was filmed there twice. I mean, it was one of those bad deals. He's like, you do not want to buy that. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'll pass on it. So a month later, he calls me up and he says, hey, I'm going to buy a 45 unit in a nicer area. And I'm looking for three partners. Would you want to be in? And I said, I'll tell you what, I said, I will go in on the deal, but I want you to teach me how to run an apartment complex. And he said, well, that's fine, because I want to learn what you're doing. Because if you've never owned property and you have enough money to buy an apartment complex, I want to see how you're negotiating these deals. And I said, okay. Well, that was the guy who ended up becoming my business partner that we scaled the property management company. We've been friends ever since. We're still good friends after exiting and selling our business, but we both were on this track together. And it was that day of me actually going down there and just saying, I don't know this guy, but I'm going to go pick his brain. So that's how I did it.
Hey, y'all. Just going to take a quick break from this conversation to let you know about the sponsor of today's episode. That sponsor is, well, frankly, it's me. It's Lee Brown University. It's no secret that real estate is crazy competitive, getting more so every day. And that's why I created Lee Brown University. Each of you has different goals. There's something in my course that's going to help you break through. So enroll in Lee Brown University today. You go to www.leebrownu.com and I'll see you there. Now, back to this amazing content.
Now, we also know that in property management, which to the rest of the world, y'all should know that property managers are very at risk in economic downturns, because when tenants stop paying, property managers don't get paid. And one of the challenges we had during COVID was this broad brush eviction moratorium. So tenants didn't have to pay. Property managers were really struggling because it's a low margin business and full of headaches. And sometimes you have tenants that are fine. They pay on time and they don't cause any trouble. And they're totally balanced out by the other end of the spectrum. And because property management has tenants in it who may or may not have a lot of attachment to taking care of the property they're in, it's where the best stories come from. So I'm dying to know, when you started managing your own properties, what was the scenario that you walked into that you to this day still can't believe it happened in real life and not on 48 hours?
Well, I wrote a book on my stories. Let's just say that. I published a book about my stories in the property management and how badly we failed at it. I mean, look, the stories can go on and on. What we used to say is we were the trash men of the real estate industry. Nobody wanted us, but they needed us.
It's true.
Like when you own a property management company or you are in the property management industry, you are a complaint desk. It's kind of like when you go to the airport and you see in bad weather, you see all these people in line at the service desk. There's no one there to tell them they're doing a good job. Everyone there is to bitch and complain and tell them they're doing something wrong.
Right.
Well, that is exactly what the property management industry. Now, what's interesting though, is they need you because it's so heavily regulated. Yeah. There's so many laws, rules, and regulations. And, you know, unfortunately, many people who are the owners of the property, the business owner of their rental, they don't understand it. They think they just own a property. Well, I tell them all the time, you may own four walls and a roof, but somebody has to own the business model that's running inside of that.
Because, yes, great point.
Yeah. And so what we did is we injected our business model into that. And now, again, like every business, it can be leveraged, it can be systematized, it can be automated, as good as the leaders of the business. Well, we
Stop. I know you know how to do the business. This podcast is about the stories. I want a story. You can pick one out of that book if you want to, but I need to hear something that's going to make me laugh. Come on, bring it.
I got one. So one day I get a call from a detective, and the detective says, do you own such and such house on such street? And I said, yes, sir. He says, well, I'm Detective so-and-so, and who is the resident of the property? And of course, this is like at 2 a.m. or 3 in the morning. And I said, his name is such and such, old gentleman in his 60s or 70s, one of those guys you never hear from. And I'm like, so he's asking me question after question after question, and I'm not getting, and I'm thinking, okay, this can't be good. He says, well, when we raided the house, ATF, that was the key that I'm like, okay, this is bad. So when we raided the house, he goes, we found weapons. We found a hijacked 18-wheeler full of vodka. We found baby stuff. We found children there and drug paraphernalia. And I'm like, wait a second. Did you say when you raided my house? He says, yeah. So apparently this house happened to sit on the corner. And we had a lot of properties. And every time I would drive by this house, it was very clean. It was always quiet. One day I noticed there's burglar bars around the house. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't remember putting burglar bars up. I'm like, you know what? I've got other people complaining to me. So I'm just going to leave it alone, right? If it's not broken, don't fix it. So the guy paid rent on time. He never complained. So I just let it go. Well, it turns out it was just a stash house. And so this guy never lived there. He never once lived there. I would go there and there were always his like nephews were there. And I was like, hey, is so-and-so here? They're like, oh no, he's off visiting family. And the door cracks like this much. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, does he need anything? No, he's good. Thank you, sir. Well, these are just the gangbangers in the neighborhood that used it as the stash house. So we go down there and the police are like, well, if you see him, blah, blah, you know, let us know. So I'm like, yes, sir, I'll let you know. And he's like, basically, we could take possession of your property because it was used in a crime if you don't basically work with us. And I'm like, no, I get it. I understand. So I go down to the property. And again, this is after a hurricane rolled through Houston. So there was all these building supplies in the garage that they didn't open the garage. The police didn't take. So me and my business partner standing there with our maintenance guy. And guess who comes walking down the street? This old gentleman. And he's like, hey, guys. And we're like, hey, how's it going? He's like, good. He's like, do you mind if I get the rest of these supplies and I'll be out of your way? And we're like, sure, no problem. So next thing you know, these guys come, they back this big old truck up. They take all the supplies. He's like, sorry about the inconvenience. And we're like, no problem. So he left. So here's the thing. He's still in the neighborhood. What am I going to do? Call the police? And all of a sudden now that problem becomes my problem. And now my house burns down.
Burns down. Yeah.
So I've got another story if you want another one, if I have time.
Was there not like human trafficking going on? They found kids at that house.
You know what? I don't know. I hope not, but I don't know. But there was some information that they would not give me.
I mean, but 18-wheeler, are you serious?
A hijacked 18-wheeler, because the property was on the corner. So if you own a property on the corner, that's a good lookout property, I learned. So I learned this in hijacking 101. Apparently, that's something that they look for, something with a big yard that you can put a semi in the backyard, because you never know when you're going to need to hijack an 18-wheeler and hide it.
So that's what they know in life. Didn't need to know that. I feel better now.
See, that's a story you learned. And that was actually a property that I owned and that we managed. But that's, you know what? That's the life in the business.
All right. So tell me your other quick one real quick.
All right. So Hurricane Ike rolls through Houston, Texas. Yeah. Me and my business partner, we have about, at the time, I think we owned about 45 houses. We lost roofs on about 33 of them. So as we're driving around the neighborhood, looking at the after effects, I'm thinking to myself, man, like these people can't stay here. So what are they going to do? And then I'm thinking, wait a second, if they can't stay here, they can't pay rent. If they can't pay rent, how am I going to pay my mortgages? And at the same time, I think it hit both me and my business partner. And we're like, we are effed. Like, what are we going to do? So we're dealing with all these issues, trying to get this stuff done. So there was one house that the power was out. The power was out in the whole city. So one morning I wake up and there's like 16 missed calls. And you know, and it's from the same number. And you know that that is never going to be a good sign. Never good. So I'm listening to my voicemails. And the first voicemail is, hey, Steve, the power's out. Is there anything you could do? We have an infant here with us. The next message is, hey, Steve, we're going to go ahead and get some candles. And we're going to use that to power. Let us know if you can help us with getting the power turned on. Next thing is, hey, Steve, the candle knocked over and it caught on fire. The next message is, Steve, the house is on fire. We need your help. And I'm listening to this thinking to myself, why are you calling me? Like, I'm not the fire department. Why aren't you calling the fire department? So, Steve, the house is burning down. So now I'm listening to these voicemails. It's kind of like a play-by-play. And I'm like, holy crap. So I called the guy and I said, hey, can you hear the sirens in the background? And he's like, sorry, I burned your house down. And I said, first of all, are you guys okay? And he said, yes. And I'm like, what happened? He's like, well, we had a candle and it knocked over and it burned the house down. And he's like, we lost everything. And I'm like, oh, man. So basically, that was the end of our conversation. So then I call my business partner. I'm like, this is after everything we're going through, Hurricane Ike problems, flooding, all this stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, if I tell him this news, he is going to be swinging from the shower. I'm thinking to myself, because he is on the edge already. And I'm like, hey, man, I got some bad news. Right. And he's just quiet. It's that eerie quiet. And he's like, what is it? And I said, one of the houses burned down last night. And it's just dead silence. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, man. I said, you there? And he's like, I'm here. And he says, which house was it? So I tell him the house and he's like, is that house insured? I'm like, I don't know. I guess it is. I mean, we got insurance on it all. He goes, I never liked that house. And it's like, I'm thinking to myself, where are you going with this?
I thought you were going to say there was insurance on it. Instead, it's a happy ending.
It's a happy ending. So he's like, what did we buy that for? So I tell him we bought it for X. And he goes, you know what that house is worth? Which was worth a lot more. He goes, this may actually save us. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, the house is worth more than what we bought it for. So it's insured for more. He's like, this could actually benefit us. And this may be what pulled us out. So then he starts to get happy. So sure enough, that's what ended up happening. So they do their whole fire investigation, all that stuff. So we ended up, what saved us from Hurricane Ike was the fact that what it was insured for and what happened. So then we're like joking, like, wow, maybe we should give all of our tenants like crooked candles or something. We didn't do that, but we're joking, thinking like, hey, that's actually not a bad idea.
Did they prosecute this guy? Because obviously it was not a candle that burned the house down. Obviously he was leaving a trail so he could cover his own little nefarious actions.
No, I mean, they went through his whole deal and they had arson investigators and all the stuff. And, you know, they check all of our bank records and everything.
There's more to this than meets the eye. There's a backstory on this. They didn't investigate it enough.
Well, I don't know, but it benefited us during a hurricane. I mean, he lost everything, all of his stuff, him and his family, all their stuff was in the house. The house burned down. So I don't know what he could have benefited from it. I mean,
I bet he took the good stuff out of the house. There's a setup here, Steve. I'm totally suspicious of this. But the good news is you kept everybody else dry. All right. So if somebody wants to reach out to you about getting your book or finding out how they can create a better business model around their investment business, what's the best way to find you?
The easiest way is to go to my website, steverosenberg.com. So it's R-O-Z-E-N-B-E-R-G, or they can follow me on any social media. I do a lot of stuff with Bigger Pockets. I do a lot of stuff with other influencers. So I'm out there just like you are, everybody. They can reach out. They can talk to me. They can ask me questions. I do answer people back personally. So I'm happy to chat and just give you some advice. And I don't need to help you or coach you to answer your questions. So I'm very open and very helpful as much as possible.
All right, friends. All of Steve's links are in the show notes for this episode. So if you didn't write down how to spell his name, or if you're just not good at listening, it's all right. You can just go click and roll and go learn some stuff. Steve, thank you for coming on the show. And I hope you have a safe flight from Hawaii back to the mainland.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right, guys, you know what to do. Go click for more. We'll see you around.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally won't just subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.